Call from mom. Answer it. Call silenced.
Instacart knows nothing gets between you and the game. That's why they make ordering from your couch easy. Stock up today and get all your groceries for the week delivered in as fast as 30 minutes without missing a minute of the game.
You have 47 new voicemails.
Download the app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply. Presented by T-Mobile, the official wireless partner of Odyssey Sports. With an awesome network and great savings, there's never been a better time to join T-Mobile. Visit your neighborhood store to make the switch today.
National contest data message rates apply.
Now, 92.9 FM ESPN presents Memphis's biggest sports columnist.
You ain't got to do nothing, homeboy. You ain't writing nothing.
No, you ain't writing nothing.
I ain't letting him write. He ain't getting no interview.
It's the award-winning Jeff Calkins from the Daily Memphian and the Jeff Calkins Show.
I'm good.
On 92.9 FM ESPN.
Gentlemen, this is something they call a groundbreaker. So let me first apologize to the shirts and the ties for your makeup. 'Cause I make you ugly as soon as it drops. We're on a rampage, bubbles popping up before you know it. There's rubble and dust, 'cause we'll be pushing it up. Somebody say,
I mean, if you like staying up for a double overtime crushing loss and then having to rest yourself out of bed the next morning.
Good teams win, great teams cover, Jeff.
They did cover.
Damn right they did.
I saw you tweeted, and maybe I interpreted it the wrong way.
Mm-hmm.
How are we supposed to go to bed after that? That's what you tweeted, right?
Indeed.
I interpreted it as how is one supposed to go to bed after that riveting and yet ultimately crushing defeat? You were thinking, how is one supposed to go to bed after cashing in big?
No, I was saying, how are we supposed to go to bed after just the...
the back and forth.
Yeah, I did not.
As Brevin said, the haymakers.
Yeah, it's just, you know, like you, afterwards, you feel like you were just on a thrill ride.
a thrill ride that ended.
Yeah,
I was not into a wall.
There was no implication that the Grizzlies were going to win. I'm just saying, you know, like, think about it in terms of.
I thought they were going to win. What do you mean? I thought they were going to win several times. Now, let's be honest, they should have won.
Oh, I definitely.
A bazillion times.
Yeah, I mean, late game execution was definitely a problem.
Late game execution, as the great John McKay said,
yep.
I'd be for it.
Yep, I would be for it. I'd vote for that.
I'd vote for that. How do you feel about your team's execution? I'm in favor.
Mm-hmm.
Right. Okay, so today on the show, let's discuss that.
Okay.
Gary Parrish is going to join us in the segment. Gary raised the question with me yesterday. Jake DeGrom was dealing for the Mets, right?
Yes.
And on the verge of setting a record, was it appropriate for him at a family dinner out on the town to stream and watch the Mets?
What? So the setting is it just him and his family, or is it like his?
It's Gary.
Yeah.
And
Gary Kelly and the boys.
Kelly and the boys. And I think like Kelly's mom or something there too.
I assume, you know? Gary was also paying.
I guess Gary was paying.
Okay. I'm in favor.
You think he can sit there and watch the Mets?
If it's going to put dad in a better mood.
It's funny, after we had this
conversation. Probably the boys would at least like to have checked in.
After we had this conversation, I got a text that from someone who said, I just can't believe that Gary is married. Now, in fairness.
Sometimes neither can Kelly.
I received that text. Mm-hmm. I, who am not successfully married.
Correct.
You know, so who am I? I'm in no position to criticize.
Correct. I think I'd view it this way. You would not have done that, correct?
No, I don't really care about the Mets.
But I'm saying, like, if there
it's
was...
the Sabres or the Bills?
Yeah.
No, well, I certainly wouldn't have watched because I wouldn't be watching anyway. But no, but my view of it, my fundamental view was,
mm-hmm.
in that situation, you can't just watch the Mets, any old Mets game, while you're out with your family having dinner. That's
correct.
Inappropriate.
Agreed.
If it's history in the making,
yeah.
then you have to say, it shouldn't just be assumed that you can be on your phone at a family dinner.
Right.
And Gary just, that's what he did. He just said, well, what, you know, whatever. They don't expect much of me. I got the kids. I'm sort of taking care of. He had a boy on either side of him. He's kind of taking care of him. He's white. But he's mostly. My view is that no one should have their phones out at a family dinner. No one.
I think that's fair.
And if you have it out, you say, hey, I just got to check my messages real quick. Or, hey, Jake DeGrom is on the verge of making history here. Would you guys mind if I stream it?
Right.
And then
right.
It is inappropriate.
I was under the impression that this is because of it was the because of the significance of the event.
It is then inappropriate for them to say no. They couldn't say yes, I will mind. That if it's a special event, you say yes. But evidently Gary just did it as if it's that no one expects much of him at this point, and he didn't really add much anyway. Now, in fairness, Kelly didn't object. She only objected subsequently,
mm-hmm.
talking to Gary's mother or something on the phone. He overheard her saying, yeah, we went out to dinner and Gary was on his phone the whole time.
Mm-hmm. Which it sounds like Gary was just on his phone at the end.
No, I think he was on the phone the whole time. I don't get the sense he was just on the phone at the end. Anyway, we'll talk to
Gary. I guess that's true. He had to know.
We're not gonna revisit this with Gary. Listen, would Aaliyah not be irritated if you were out and you're on your phone the whole time?
I would say 95% of what I do irritates Aaliyah. But yes, she would be irritated. But I will say this.
If you guys go out for dinner,
yeah.
and it's, let's even say it's a football Saturday, so
sure.
you've got money down, right?
Yeah.
You know, it's college football season.
Yes.
You guys go to Folks Folly. Are
right.
you on your phone?
No. I do make an effort to put my phone up in those situations.
Yeah, no, that's different than if you're, you know, eating a tuna fish sandwich, standing at the
right.
At the island, of the, you know, whatever. It's
right.
a different situation. Anyway, well, you know what we're going to talk to Gary about? Not that. We're going to talk to Gary about Penny Hardaway and what he had to say yesterday as he was talking about the comings and goings
mm-hmm.
Of the basketball program. And by the way, it doesn't sound like they're done. Like, he was asked yesterday, in terms of players, they're done. But he was asked yesterday about Darby Rich, the strength and conditioning coach,
yep.
and whether he was still the strength and conditioning coach. And he said, he is now. He said he is now,
mm-hmm.
but we encourage everybody to follow their dreams. Doesn't that sound like he's not going to be any longer the strength and conditioning? There's two ways to answer that. You could say, of course Darby's with us. Like, he's
sure.
the foundation of our program. Or you could say, well, listen, we encourage everyone to follow our dreams, but right now he is our strength and conditioning coach.
Yeah, it implied to me that Darby got an offer that I don't know if we can match.
I think, or that he's just kind of looking to
sure.
to head out to other pastures. Anyway, I'll just literally from the way he answered that,
mm-hmm.
I'll be a little surprised if he's back. Anyway, he did have interesting things to say yesterday. I thought he was really good, Penny, in
agreed.
What he said yesterday. I got some people objected to... like, Penny compares, you know, incoming freshman to Tyler Hero. And so I heard, he sounds ridiculous saying this person's like Tyler. No, it's just, he's not saying he's Tyler. He's saying stylistically. He's a shooter. What he means is he's a shooter, right? That's what he means.
I always appreciate when people make comparisons because my dumb brain can be like, oh,
yeah.
okay, I know. I know what he looks like now.
In an ideal, perfect world, that's
sure.
what they're supposed to turn out to be. But no one really believes Tyler Hero's walking in that door. So I thought he was really good. He was totally practical.
Yes.
And that's what I appreciated most of all. We'll talk to GP about that in the next segment. Then Chris Harrington will join us. Chris Harrington and Drew Hill, if you want to read 9 billion words on the return of Jaren Jackson Jr., the Daily Memphian is the place for you because they went back and forth on all the implications of Jaren Jackson Jr.'s return. He was doubtful last night and did not play last night, consistent with the description, but it sounds like he is coming back any moment now. And Chris and Drew have written extensively about it. And, of course, we'll talk to Chris about last night's proceedings as well. And then Fish on Friday on Tuesday, one of my favorite segments. Could not have done this once upon a time. I have to thank the pandemic because it never occurred to me to say, listen, I have this best friend who I talk to 9 times a day.
Mm-hmm.
But he knows nothing about sports. Let's put him on the sports talk radio show that I do. I've done sports talk radio in this town for 20 years now, certainly, if you go back to with George. And never occurred to me that I could have Fishman on this.
Never really proposed it.
Never said, hey, George, would you like this guy to show? I got a possible guest for you. Charles Fishman, he's my best friend. And
how do you feel about water?
And yeah, like, are you interested in the ketchup shortage?
Yes.
You know, what's he going to talk about? What can he contribute
on
baseball?
Do you know what
baseball?
The moon smells
nothing.
Like?
Yeah, right. Do you know but hell, it's random as hell, but we enjoy it. And because of the pandemic, when we were people like, what are you going to do to fill time during the pandemic? And I'm like, oh, I got to
buckle up, boys and
break
girls.
Break glass in case of emergency here. Haul out Fishman, and he's become a sensation, a radio sensation. We'll talk to him about all manner of things in the second hour, but I've avoided it, can avoid it no longer. How do you feel about last night? Gallant? Crushed? How is a Grizzly fan to feel? Remember we categorized losses just the other day?
Yeah.
Chris Harrington was categorizing losses. How do we feel about this one?
Let one get away, but it's more explainable to me, or it's more understandable to me than the letting one against the Knicks get away.
It's the same genre as the Knicks loss.
Yeah.
You had a game won, you let it get away. The difference is that in order to get to the point of having the game won and the way you fought back and the through 2 OTs, was much more, and against Denver, a diminished Denver team.
Yeah, they still had Jokic.
You're supposed to beat the Knicks, right?
Yeah.
And so letting a game get away against a team you're supposed to beat is very different than letting a game get away against a team that you weren't supposed to beat, especially considering no Dylan Brooks, no Jonas Valanciunas.
Yeah.
So I mostly, you come away to me with twin thoughts here. One, my God, what an effort that was. What a gallant effort on the part of, like, so many players were really fabulous.
John D'Anthony were spectacular.
I mean, D'Anthony was just freaking
unreal.
Out of his mind, comes right in off the injury list, comes back and goes for 25, 8 rebounds, 6 assists, was just and incandescent in the first half. So D'Anthony was unbelievable. Ja Morant, 36, 8 rebounds, 12 assists, 3 steals. Just brilliant, particularly in the first OT, was tremendous. The second half, first OT, was tremendous. Now, what's interesting, of course, is both those players, well, we'll get to this in a minute. Xavier Tillman without Jonas there. Now, mind you, Jokic had 47 points.
Right.
So, but he was 18 and 14. Steps right in, goes 18 and 14, had foul trouble.
Tough rebounds.
Yeah. Like, hit threes, 2 of 3 from three. Like, how do you not be happy about that? Grayson Allen, 24 points yet again. Big night, 3 steals. And everyone was contributing. Conchar comes in the second half. He was good. Like it was really an inspired performance.
Yeah, it felt like a real team effort
by the home team, by our home team,
yeah.
The away team. Just gutty as hell.
Yes,
like proud of him.
Yes.
My little heart swells.
Yeah.
At the effort. And the way so many of them are playing. It's crazy. Down Dylan Brooks, down Jaren Jackson, down Jonas.
Yeah.
And they do that.
And I have to think that for sure those two guys would have helped, considering that.
Well, Jonas Barton, certainly would have helped.
Well, and I think Dylan would have helped on Barton.
Yeah. Oh, there's no question about that too. So I come away thinking, my God, what an effort.
Yeah,
it was gutty. And because it's a regular season game as opposed to a playoff game, if that had been a playoff loss.
Oh, God, that would stink for years.
It would feel epic,
yeah.
Epic, but also would stink for forever.
Yeah.
So that's a big part of it. This team has really, in a year that has been difficult from the beginning with all kinds of protocols and strange stuff and games stacked upon game, stacked upon game, stacked upon game.
Start and stop.
Riddled with injury. The way that they have risen to the moment throughout the season, it's really pretty extraordinary. And as a tribute to the front office, to the coaching staff, and to the players themselves.
Agreed.
Tremendous. Having said that, the other way you come around is thinking, my God.
How many chances did they have to
Let's just start this. If they had beaten the Knicks, the Mavs, and the Nuggets.
Yeah.
And they absolutely should have beaten the Knicks, the Mavs, and the Nuggets.
Heck, they just won two of the three.
They would be 32-24 if they had beaten the Knicks, the Mavs, and the Nuggets. And they should have. And let us count the ways that they should have won last night. With 3:52 left in the game.
Yeah.
Xavier Tillman scored to put them up.
12, right?
114-102.
Yeah.
With 3:52 left in the game, they're up by 12. I checked the ESPN win probability, 98.8% at that point. It was right after that Porter hit that ridiculous three.
Yeah.
Just ridiculous three.
And it wasn't even, like, lucky. It was right down the middle.
It was kind of, the way he got it off, it was.
Yeah, but he still,
it
still
was
drilled
absurd. Okay, so that sort of gave him life a little bit. But whatever, like, okay, that was with 3:52 left. With 2:05 left?
Yeah.
They were up 114-107.
Yeah.
They were up 7 points with 2:05 left. And it comes down to they have a shot at the end to win. And Grayson Allen, who was good last night. Now, he wasn't. He shot 8 of 20. But he was good last night. Misses a corner three. And a corner three is a wide, a good shot.
Not only that, Ja took a double team on, and he kicked it to him. And I thought it was a good pass in rhythm. Like, I had no problem with that.
So you're like, all right, well, damn.
Yeah.
This stinks. So they go to OT, and Ja's tremendous.
Yes.
Like, Ja's putting on a show. And in the end, like, this is a game, by the way, where Ja scored 36, another big game. And as we've discussed before, when Ja scores a lot, they lose.
Yeah.
But I don't think it's because you don't want Ja.
No, those aren't related.
Like, well, they're related in this way. Ja steps up when he has to.
Yeah.
There's a reason that fourth quarter Ja exists, and certainly did last year. And the idea was Ja is more aggressive when he knows he has to be. And I think he knew in this moment he had to be. He was brilliant in the OT. And sure enough, with 1:30 left in the first OT, they are up 125-120. They have a 5-point lead with a minute and a half left.
Yep.
Or how about this? With less than a minute to go at 55.9, they're up 125-122, and Grayson Allen misses that dunk.
Yeah, and it wasn't even just the missed dunk. It was a 3-on-1.
It was a 3-on-1. I mean, that was it right there. You convert.
That play was really weird because even though it was a 3-on-1, it looked like at first they were – okay, do we push it or should we pull it back out and run some clock? Like, you know, it just felt indecisive.
It's herky-jerky. There's no question about it. And then that one, once again, they had a chance to win.
Yeah.
They got a crappy shot.
Yeah, that was not what they were trying to. You could tell actually what Ja was trying to do is he thought same thing. They're going to double me and I'm going to kick it to the corner. And then he looked and saw that the corner was covered. And then he had to like redirect and throw it up. Shot. Yeah.
I mean, that was not.
He almost made
brilliant execution.
I think if he would have thrown down the dunk on the rebound, like that would have. That was like an inch and a half away from being an unbelievable play.
Okay,
I think it would have counted.
So then you lose yet again in, I mean, you have an opportunity in the first overtime and regulation you can't convert, have an opportunity.
Yeah.
First overtime you can't convert, have an opportunity. Second overtime, you're up 132 to 129.
Yep.
And it was in the second overtime when Melton threw that stupid pass.
Yeah.
Just crazy.
Yeah.
It was with, I think, 155 left. They're up 132, 129. They get possession.
Yep.
And Melton just, who has a brilliant game.
Oh, yeah.
Brilliant game. And this is, to me, then what it is. Like, Melton has a brilliant game, and yet there's that moment.
Yeah.
Ja has a brilliant.
Was there any doubt when Capazzo let it fly that was going in?
Yeah. Ja has a brilliant game, and yet not the shot you wanted at the end of the first overtime.
Yeah.
And so then you're left with this question, which is one of the great cliches of the world that I don't know if I believe in or not. Is there such a thing as learning to win?
Well, I mean, it's to me the fundamental question that I have is, are they not executing late game because they're young? Or are they not executing late game because on the other end of the floor they had Jokic, they had, you know, an MVP candidate, and does it come down to...
Yeah, but here's the question. They had those players all throughout regulation.
Yeah.
Why does it break down at the end of the game? Now, to your point...
It's like playing with fire.
Maybe it's just... In other words, that's my question. Is it that you haven't, quote-unquote, learned how to win, or is it that you don't have the players
right.
who can win in those situations?
Right.
In other words,
is this a talent problem or is this an experience
win,
problem?
And it's not a talent problem generally, but you could ask the question, is the type of talent the Grizzlies have conducive to the breadth of the game?
Right.
They're deep, they run, they're whatever else, but not conducive to late game clutch situation.
Right, because typically when you see in late game situations, the guys that make the plays are the...
That's where you get the studs. It's
exactly.
Not depth there.
Yeah. It's Luka hitting the floater. It's Jokic hitting...
In the final
hitting,
minutes,
yeah.
Depth is kind of a problem.
Right.
It's like if you got three quarterbacks, do you have one?
I would argue no.
Right. And so if you have seven...
David Cutcliffe
might not. If you have 13 options in the stretch, do you have... Now, it's Ja. Ja is the option. But... You know, and let's be honest, the ball was in Ja's hands both times with a chance to win. That it's not like they don't know who their guy is.
For
their
sure.
guy is Ja. And in one of them, they got the shot they wanted.
Yeah.
And then the next one, they didn't.
Yeah, and there was even like a couple on like those side outs. Like, remember how hard it was to get the ball in bounds? Like, there's, I don't know, just a lot of a couple of the late game shots just felt... Very, very, very difficult.
The whole thing did not feel nearly as fluid as the course
exactly.
of the game. There's no question. To your point about Jokic, though, by the way, mentioned the Grizzlies up 12 with 3:52 to go. Okay? From that point forward, Jokic scored or assisted on 11 points in the final 3 minutes.
Yeah.
Like, he was it.
No. I mean, and
he was,
not, and he was hitting the tough shots.
And then over the course of the two OTs, he scored or assisted on 16 of their 23.
And I think he hit the dagger. That three. I mean, I know it was open.
It was amazing. That it was just, it was like a layup. It
oh,
was so
yeah.
easy.
Yeah. I mean, it was basically like a warm-up jumper.
So,
I mean, to answer your question.
I mean, none of this depresses me.
Oh, no. I do think there is an element of, yes, you can, quote-unquote, learn to win from this perspective. you start to learn, okay, sometimes the game is going too fast. Like, I think a few of those turnovers and a few of those plays, like, we didn't even mention it, but remember when Ja had the double dribble?
Ja had the double dribble. Oh, like, in order for them to get back, particularly in the regulation,
yeah,
the Grizzlies had to go on an incredible dry spell, yes, and they did, right?
Yeah, I mean, it was at a point where you're like, I think if they get two stops, this is over, and they couldn't get the two stops. I do think you can learn to win from this perspective. I think a lot of those mistakes are made because you're going too fast. The game's going too fast. And I do think with experience, I think you learn to, all right, let's slow it down. Like, we've got to, let's get a go-to play. Like, let's get things under control. And I think when you get things under control.
Well, with experience, will D'Anthony Melton not throw that pass?
I think that's entirely reasonable. I think you learn, hey, I see he's open, but I can't take that risk. Like, I think it becomes a situation of sometimes you know when you can be risky, and then other times, you know, hey, let's just go down. Let's get a good shot. Let's run our offense. Let's go get a good shot. Because I just felt like even the 3-on-1, it felt so indecisive.
Right.
And I do think that with experience,
and that was the point that Brevin made, is trying to lift everybody's spirits. He said, by being in these, I mean, this is, again, meaningful games, right?
Yeah.
By being in these meaningful games, this is when you learn, and I guess that's the only way to look at it, right? I think that is the only
I think
way
so.
To look at it. This is the only way to look at it. I thought it was... It was a riveting basketball game.
And
absolutely
riveting.
I
think the other thing that we've realized the last month or so, this isn't really fluky. They're a good basketball team right now.
Oh, my God, it's not fluky.
Like, they're a good basketball team.
Let's be honest. The only games they've lost are three games that they absolutely should have won against the Knicks, the Mavs, and this one. And then they lost to the Pacers where they were in it till the end. That one I never thought they were going to win just because it's
the Pacers. No, that one felt like if they got the win, they kind of stole it.
But the other three, they should have won them.
Yeah.
And then they would be, it is true. Like, if you want to beat yourself up, not yourself, but if you want to, like, moan and groan about what could have been, that could be appropriate.
Yeah. The Grizzlies made critical mistakes.
You're going to be facing the red hot Steph in a play-in game.
Yeah,
that'll be fun too, though. I mean,
I'd love to be a part of it.
Yeah, to me, it's okay. Like, I enjoyed myself last night. It was crazy. It was a riveting game. I was a little exhausted by the end. What time did that end?
Probably around 11-ish.
Yeah. Anyway, it was a lot of fun. We'll talk to GP, Chris Harrington, and Fish on Friday on Tuesday. We will do that next. In the meantime, however, you can bet on hoops. You could have bet on last night. A Jokic same game parlay bet would have probably stood you in good stead last
maybe
night.
Maybe cashed at half.
Maybe cashed at half. You just take a bunch of numbers from the same game. What, money line, point spread, player points scored, player rebounds, player assists, player three-pointers, player steals, player blocks, all that, whatever. Bundle them up in a nice little bundle, bet just a little bit, and win a lot. It's the same game parlay bet available only on FanDuel Sportsbook. Also on FanDuel Sportsbook, but that's for new and existing users, the same game parlay bet. And they have the insurance, which is if you fall one leg short, you get up to $25 back each day. Each day. It's not like a one-time deal. The one-time deal is sign up and you can bet up to $1,000 on your first bet, and if you whiff, that money will be right back in your account so you can bet it again in site credit. Kind of an amazing sort of insurance. All you got to do is download the FanDuel Sportsbook app today. Use promo code Calkins, CALKINS, to sign up. Must be 21 or older and present in Tennessee. Refund issued as non-withdrawable site credit that expires in 7 days. Max refund, $25. Terms apply. See sportsbook.fanduel.com for details. For problem gambling support, call 1-800-889-9789. GP is next. It's Jeff Calkins Show, 92.9 FM ESPN.
How can your mortgage work for you instead of you simply working for your mortgage? Here to bring you the answers you need is Don Holsinger, Chief Mortgage Officer with Orion Federal Credit Union, with this week's Mortgage Minute.
Finding the perfect home can be a lengthy and stressful stressful process. And one of the trickiest steps is acquiring the right financing. Orion streamlines the approval process to give qualified buyers a pre-approval within minutes. Thanks to our partnership with Fannie Mae and access through their underwriting system. At Orion, we're here to help you get qualified for your next home in three simple steps. One, complete an application. Two, discuss your options with one of our mortgage lenders. Three, take your pre-approval letter to your realtor and make an offer with confidence. Orion can even pay $2,000 towards closing costs. To learn more, visit OrionHomeLoan.com or give us a call at 1-800-532-9025.
This Mortgage Minute has been provided to you by Orion Federal Credit Union. Terms and conditions apply. Contact Orion for details. Conventional mortgages only. Minimum loan amount $95,000. Available in select states. Orion is an equal housing lender.
Jeff Allen, my man, what's happening over at Gossett Kia South Mount Moriah?
All I can say, Randy, is the right time to buy your new Kia at Gossett Kia South on Mount Moriah. I've got a 2021 Kia Forte, 41 MPG, or $129 a month lease, just $31.99 due at signing. And a 2021 Kia Soul, $159 per month lease, $30.99 due at signing.
And I see you got 2021 Kia K5, built in America, $184 a month lease, $39.99 due at signing. They're all 36-month leases.
Plus our industry-leading 10-year, 100,000-mile powertrain limited warranty program. So whether you live in Horn Lake, South Haven, Olive Branch, or Memphis, and let's not forget Senatobia, you'll be happy, happy at Gossett Kia Mount Moriah, 2680 Mount Moriah, or KiaMountMoriah.com.
All 36-month leases, zero security deposit, 650 acquisition fee, Forte, ME344837, MSRP 20,655, Soul M777-2135, MSRP 21130, K5 MG00565, MSRP 25725, 10,000 miles per year, 20 cents excess mileage, includes all manufacturer rebates and incentives, PF695, excludes tax title and license with approved credit, warranty is a limited powertrain warranty, see dealer for complete details, offer valid through 4/30/2021, dealer stock only.
For the ones who know safety isn't a catchphrase, it's a culture. And the ones who help make sure everyone makes it home safe. For the safety-minded who watch everyone's backs, Grainger offers supplies and solutions for every industry, as well as safety assessments and training to keep your facility safe and your people safer. Call, click Grainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
At CDW, we get the importance of clear communication.
I was on a conference call, and I think my boss asked me to send her roasted beets in a can.
Talk to the experts at CDW. Using Poly headsets and cameras, they'll orchestrate a collaboration solution that lets you hear and see clearly on any device, any meeting platform.
Huh. Looks like she asked me to send her the report sheets when I can. You like beets?
No. IT orchestration by CDW. People who get it. Learn more at cdw.com/poly.
Hey, it's Jason Smith, and starting stronger starts at AutoZone, where they've got battery solutions in the form of free battery testing, free battery charging, and replacement batteries that fit your needs. That's what makes them America's number one battery destination.
Get in the zone, AutoZone.
T-Mobile is bringing 5G from big cities to small towns across America. We've been investing billions to light up the largest and fastest 5G network. And now, according to competitive data from Umlaut, T-Mobile is the most reliable 5G network too. And we want everyone to experience it now. Introducing the free 5G upgrade. Bring any old cell phone to T-Mobile and trade it in for a free 5G Samsung Galaxy. Still have an old flip phone? If it's in working condition, you can trade it in. Plus, all our plans include 5G access on the full T-Mobile network at no extra cost. Now that's an upgrade. T-Mobile's America's leader in 5G. Experience it today with a free 5G upgrade. Visit a neighborhood store or T-Mobile.com to make the switch.
Phone via 24 bill credits while supplies last plus tax. If you cancel credit, stop and balance on required finance agreement may be due. Contact us. Qualifying credit service and undamaged trade-in required. Most reliable according to independent third-party Umlaut from crowdsourced user experience data from September 2020 to February 2021. Details at T-Mobile.com.
For the ones who know safety isn't a catchphrase, it's a culture. And the ones who help make sure everyone makes it home safe. For the safety-minded who watch everyone's backs, Grainger offers supplies and solutions for every industry, as well as safety assessments and training to keep your facility safe and your people safer. Call, click Grainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
Broadcasting live from the Triumph Bank Studios, invested in our communities, making banking easy for you. Let's talk growth. Triumph Bank. It's the Jeff Calkins Show on 92.9 FM ESPN.
All right, if you want some money, Here's what you do. Go to claimittn.gov. Claimittn.gov. Because it turns out like there's money floating around out there. Honestly, there is $1.1 billion in Tennessee's unclaimed property fund. It could be from some like refund check that you got that's bouncing around somewhere, or from a bank account that you forgot, or a stock dividend payment that showed up, didn't show up somewhere. Maybe you overpaid a doctor's office or a security deposit from a utility company. All this stuff ends up with the Tennessee Department of Treasury, and they want to put it in your hands because it belongs to you. It takes literally 5 seconds. Go to claimittn.gov, claimittn.gov, and put your name in. I did it. Found about 90 bucks I was owed. I'll take 90 bucks. So give it a try. Check your name, your maiden name. If you're a business owner, use your company name too. Claimittn.gov. Joined now by Gary Parrish. GP is the host of the GP Show from 4 to 6. He is a national college basketball columnist for CBS Sports, CBSSports.com, a multiple Emmy-winning personality, rising star on the field of meteorology, and a big fan of the New York Mets. So Penny spoke yesterday about his about the comings and goings, and he sounded like a coach who has changed his way of doing things. That that once upon a time it was star-spangled freshmen and potential one-and-dones and whatever else, and now he realizes you need older players. He says you can get lucky and it could come together, and didn't for us that first year, I mean the James Wiseman year. But beyond that, that's not how you win in college basketball. You win with grizzled veterans and et cetera. Is it wise that Penny – is this both necessity and wise, I guess is the question, GP?
Well, he sounds to me like anybody who is, now a few years into a new job and you are learning as you do it. I don't care what job you take as a basketball coach or a radio host or anything in between. You go into it thinking, okay, I know exactly how I want to do this. And then you do it for a little while and you go, okay, that doesn't work. This does work. Man, I should try this. And so I think in the simplest of terms, he's maturing as a coach. And that's a good and encouraging sign. I think if you're a Memphis basketball fan, you've got a guy who showed that he has the ability to bring a team together and adjust on the fly, like he did that last season. That team went from bad to good. He's responsible for that, and now he's has a better understanding of what success looks like and how to roster build. And listen, if he could go out and get Chet Holmgren and three other 5-star freshmen, I'm confident he would have done it. But he knows what success looks like now. I know that it didn't end in the NCAA tournament, but that team was good enough to not only be in the NCAA tournament, it was good enough to win games in the NCAA tournament. It just didn't have an NCAA tournament resume on Selection Sunday. And so, I took from yesterday's, Zoom call a lot of the same things that a lot of people took, which is that, this is a coach who he doesn't sound – heading into year four, Penny doesn't sound like heading into year one or even year two, Penny. He's learning as he goes, and that's I think even he would acknowledge that.
Okay, all that's true. I believe all of that. But here's just to play devil's advocate. I could start this radio show and say, listen, here's what I'm going to do. I'm going to get the head coaches on every single day. I'm a head coach of a different Memphis team, and I'm going to get all the biggest – I'm going to get a Grizzly every single day on this team, whatever, and I'm going to get a Tiger player. And then I realize I can't. In other words, is it that Penny has realized that's the best way to win? Or is it he realized I can want to do all I want to bring in one and dones. I can't do it. Like, in other words, it's not that he's just matured as a coach. It's that he can't do what we thought he could do. I mean, I'm just being devil's advocate here. He can't go out. I mean, let's be honest. Tennessee's having a better job, doing a better job now, going out and getting those star players than Penny is.
Well, I never thought that was going to hold up. I mean, the reason I advocated firing Tubby Smith and hiring Penny Hardaway in that very specific moment wasn't just because the program had hit rock bottom under Tubby from a talent perspective, from an attendance perspective. I mean, that was a big part of it. But I was never just fire Tubby Smith and then let's see what we do next. It was always fire Tubby Smith, hire Penny Hardaway, and here's why. Because he's going to bring James Wiseman. Because he's going to bring other prospects that he had, you know, real connections to. And so, whether it works long-term or not, we'll see. But the short-term return was easy to identify. But I never thought that because he was going to be able to bring James Wiseman and DJ Jeffries quickly, that meant he was going to go, beat Kentucky for, five-star prospects consistently. He was going to beat Kentucky for those prospects early. But I never thought that this was going to – and I guess some people did suggest this, that now it's going to be Duke, Kentucky, and Memphis banging heads for five stars every recruiting class. I never thought that was a reality. Memphis is not Kentucky. Memphis is not Duke. Memphis is not in the ACC. Memphis is not in the SEC. And so, maybe Penny thought that he could, but I never subscribed to that. And so, again, they're going to be involved, with some five stars. They're going to have to be smart about picking their spots. I mean, they were technically a finalist for Chet Holmgren yesterday, but they were never getting Chet Holmgren. Right. Like I would actually argue that that's just wasted time. Like you can be one of six finalists or whatever it was, but what is the point? You don't get a ribbon for finishing second. You either get a player or you don't get a player. And there was just never a scenario where Chet Holmgren was coming to the University of Memphis. So they've got to be smart about picking their spots. And I think if they pick their spots wisely, they'll be able to pull one here or there. But, this was, even John Calipari at Memphis, people don't remember this, or either they remember it incorrectly. John Calipari would go get a Derrick Rose late or a Tyreek Evans late. But if you look early on, I mean, really for the majority of the John Calipari era, he would go get a Sean Banks, a five-star prospect. Well, why? Because nobody else would recruit him because he was a gang member. You didn't have to beat Duke in Kentucky for Sean Banks. You had to beat others.
He was changing that, though. Like, he got, obviously, D. Rose. He got Tyreek. He got, like, Darius Washington. He got some high-profile guys who were not gang members.
But it didn't start.
No, like, clearly didn't start way. Like that. Yeah. But yeah, here's the question. Could it have ended – again, I asked that question only to be devil's advocate. I think Penny is doing it the right way, to be clear. I guess I do wonder, in an alternate universe, obviously you were never going to be Kentucky or Duke, but look, Gonzaga's picking off people, right? Like, you don't have to be in the ACC to do it. Calipari did it here. If it had worked differently – I mean, this is so an alternate universe. If there hadn't been a pandemic, if James Wiseman hadn't been suspended, and if they had, like, gone to the Final Four that year, right? Do you actually think it could have, which wasn't out of the realm of possibility, if the world hadn't turned out the way it turned out, do you think it could have turned out differently? In other words, do you think he would have had a better shot going forward? Oh, look at these stars who are coming through here. Look at them winning big. We've turned the brand more into what it was when Calipari was here, and we'll continue to get great players.
Of course, that would have helped. That would have been beneficial. Like, Kentucky went through a stretch where, or John Calipari specifically went through a stretch where he had Derrick Rose, Tyreek Evans, John Wall, and, Marcus Teague. He was taking one-and-done point guards and just launching them into the NBA. He had, Derrick Rose was the number one pick in 2008. John Wall was the number one pick in 2010. At that point, like, if you were considered the best high school point guard in the country, you had to look at Kentucky just based on what Kentucky was doing with players that were described the way you were described. So that kind of stuff feeds off of each other, and it undeniably helps. So, yeah, in an alternative universe where James Wiseman, never gets suspended, or even does get suspended, but then, comes back in January and, and plays. And James Wiseman and Precious Achiuwa are the most talented front court in the country. And Memphis goes to the NCAA tournament and ends up in the Final Four. Because there is no pandemic and there is an NCAA tournament. Yeah, I think that would have helped, because then you could have immediately shown the next batch of prospects, hey, we pulled a kid from Memphis, a kid from New York, multiple projected lottery picks, and we built it into something special very quickly. Once you can show that to somebody, then it makes it more attractive to somebody. I think it would have helped, but do I think that would have turned Memphis into Kentucky or Duke? No. You're correct about Gonzaga. They just, they're about to enroll two five-star prospects, top 10, consensus players, including the number one player in the country. Gonzaga has been to 22 straight NCAA tournaments. Gonzaga has, played in two of the last four national championship games. Like, they've built that over time. This is, we sort of touched on how John Calipari eventually was able to go get a Derrick Rose and a Tyreek Evans. Well, Gonzaga, how about this? In the history of Gonzaga's program, before the class of 2020, they had only enrolled out of high school a total of four top 50 prospects, four top 50s, zero five-stars. But now this thing has been taken to another level. They enrolled a five-star, Jalen Suggs, last year, and now they've got two five-stars this year. But 2 years ago, this was a fact. Gonzaga had never enrolled a five-star prospect out of high school, period. It's taken time to get where the Zags are right now. And whether it's a good thing or a bad thing for them, we'll see. Mixing up the formula when you're having all this success might not be the smartest thing. But, that Gonzaga thing that we're watching right now on the recruiting trail, it took literally two decades for it to build to this point.
Well, and that's the other question. It is what is the best path? And most people, of course, would say the best path is to have some experience. Like, it was good that Gonzaga had experienced players this year, and it was good that they had Jalen Suggs this year.
That's the formula. That's the formula.
Now, but Baylor didn't have that formula. Baylor had more like the formula than Memphis. Here's the amazing thing: is if you look at that star-spangled recruiting class that Memphis had, and all these top 50 players and young players, et cetera. Now you look at the starting lineup next year, and it could very well be a DeAndre Williams transfer, Landers Nolly transfer, Earl Timberlake transfer, and Lester Quinones won't be a transfer. He's going to be a holdover. And then whatever, it could be Davion Warren transfer, it could be Alex Lomax, it could be Chandler Lawson transfer. Like, it is a wildly different way to build this team now. It's transfers. It's transfers and a couple of gutty holdovers, the Lester and Alo, and transfers. And they brought in the young freshmen, but they're not expected to be, they're not high-profile dudes who expect to be big contributors. It's why I wrote in my column today that the face of this program we thought was going to be James Wiseman, and it turns out it's DeAndre Williams. And that may be a better way to win. Certainly is if James Wiseman isn't playing, but it's fairly remarkable.
Yeah, I think this is going to be college basketball going forward. Because if you've got players who are good enough to have star roles at the high major level very early in their career, they're probably not going to stay long. Like, they're going to try to, they'll either enter the NBA draft for sensible reasons or for nonsensical reasons, but they're probably not going to stay that long, with rare exceptions. And then the players who aren't good enough to star for you early, but maybe could someday, you won't see that day. They'll bounce. They'll star for somebody else as a junior and senior. And this is just going to be college basketball. I'm not certain that it's great for the sport. I am certain that it is what needed to be done to allow basketball players to move freely at least one time. But your recipe now, even Gonzaga, like, was, has transfers. Andrew Nembhard is a transfer. Gonzaga has, Kyle Wiltshire a few years ago was a transfer. You're gonna need to keep as many of the important pieces as you can, and you're going to have to recruit off of other people's rosters. Like, there is not going to be a good team in the country that isn't reliant on some level on Division I transfers. And so, Memphis' team next season will, be led by, in theory, multiple transfers. Like, if we – I think it was probably this season with DeAndre Williams and Landers Notley. But, like, Kentucky is going to be heavily reliant on transfers next season. Kansas is going to be reliant on transfers next season. Texas is going to be reliant on transfers next season. This is just going to be the way the sport is, and Memphis seems to be adapting to that pretty well. Penny has shown that
the staff. Go ahead. I'm sorry. Go ahead.
I was going to say, like, Penny has shown he can go out and enroll a top 10 recruiting class, a number one recruiting class. He did that. That's something that happened. And now he's showing that he can, flourish in the transfer market as well. To go get Landers Notley, DeAndre Williams, and Earl Timberlake at the very least in back-to-back years is no easy feat. If Memphis does go back to the NCAA tournament next season, it will be because of that. It won't be because of any high school prospect he enrolled.
He was so practical yesterday. He was asked, do you think basically you brought in more than you lost? And he just said, I don't look at it like that. Like, and that's a sort of an easy thing to say, right? But, and you can say it's a cop-out, but I think it's right. Like, he's not Zach Kleiman making a trade where you say, I wonder who won this trade. He had players who didn't want to be here for one reason or another. They were gone. He's got to go out and replace him. It's just reality. And for him to say, did I bring in more than I lost? I didn't want him to leave. Like, I didn't want him to leave. I'm trying to now find other players who will help us win. And the truth of the matter is, and this is a point I made in my column today, it's not about the abstract amount of talent you have. Abstract amount of talent, that team may have been more talented than this coming team. And I'm not saying this team is going to achieve more than that team did, because I don't know. We'll see. But, like, that team's abstract talent didn't do them much good in South Dakota. Like, it for a long time, they struggled this year, and that's why they didn't make the tournament. I thought Penny was really practical about it. He said, I don't care. It's not whether I won, lost, broke even, whatever. Those guys wanted to leave, and so then I had to go find players who will help us win. I thought he was stunningly pragmatic, and I thought that was the right approach. Your thoughts?
Yeah, like, listen, from a pure talent perspective, you would still like to have Boogie Ellis. You would still like to have DJ Jeffries. But if they're unhappy or unsatisfied, then, you're actually better off losing them if you can replace them, for the most part, with some comparable talent. And I know Penny said he doesn't look at it that way, but if you were asking me to look at it that way, I don't think that they've added as much as they lost from a talent perspective. But it doesn't mean that next season's team can't be better than this season's team. If next season's team is, first off, like, bought in from the jump, whole from the jump, but also, like, is the next season's team is features nothing but people who want to be here. We heard it more early in the season than late in the season, but still heard it over and over again, talking about, whether it was Penny talking about selfishness or the players talking about selfishness. Well, eventually they got that stuff figured out, but still some of the pieces didn't want to be a part of this. Now you've replaced them with pieces that want to be part of it. And it doesn't mean that player for player you're more talented next season, but player for player you might be better off next season from a team perspective. Like, just because they haven't replaced, every, former four-star recruit with a four-star recruit doesn't mean that the team can't be better if everybody is bought in and everybody understands their roles. And Penny seems to be looking at it, from that perspective. Like, we might not have as much talent. They might, but they might not. But there's a decent chance, I think, that they're a better basketball team, at least early in the season, because as we just learned, being really good late doesn't do you a whole lot of good if you bang up your resume as an AAC team early, in November and December.
It's funny. Another thing he was asked yesterday was, like, you got to make the NCAA tournament next year, right? Like, you've got to, right? And I get that. Like, Of course you got to. Like, because honestly, a lot of these players are going to leave after this year, and you won't, you know, then you're really going to be starting over and et cetera. And so, sure, you've got to. But the truth of the matter is, if you really step back and think about it, got to or what? Like, or what? Like, no, Penny's not going to get, unless it's a disaster, he's not going to either get fired or walk away. Like, so, yes, in some theoretical, yes, you want him to make the tournament. It is time to make the tournament. It's time to get over the hump. It's time to be able to show recruits that you can make the tournament, that you will be. But in terms of got to, like, maybe Tubby had to make the tournament because then he's going to get whacked, and he was whacked. There's no got to with Penny. Honestly, I just don't believe that. Like, you know, he has, and it's appropriate, you know, he's got more room for error than I think any coach in Grizzlies history, and I mean in Tigers history, and I think he should. But so, yes, do I want him to make the tournament? Yeah, next year, yes. But I don't think there's any got to.
Well, you know, people, you know, will put together hot seat lists heading into next season, and Penny Hardaway will not be on any of them.
No.
Like, his job is in no jeopardy. He did, like, he's got to make the NCAA tournament if the goal is to stop people from noting that he's never made the NCAA right. tournament. But, like, or he's got to make the NCAA tournament or what? Like, he's the coach. Penny Hardaway is the Memphis basketball coach for the foreseeable future, for better or worse. And I think it's for better. I you know, has this gone as well as I thought it would go or hoped it would go? No, I didn't think they'd be entering year four still looking for, you know, an NCAA tournament appearance. But it's an undeniable, massive upgrade over the previous situation. And I think, on the whole, like, going pretty well. They finished 31st at KenPom last season. That's not nothing. They will be a projected NCAA tournament. Like, when Jerry Palm does his first bracket, you know, projecting what the NCAA tournament might look like next March, Memphis will be in that. You know, Memphis will be picked second in the AAC. Like, you know, Tubby Smith ran the program into the ground, like just straight into the ground. Penny Hardaway has not done that. He's taken it off the ground and made it respectable again. And so, yeah, it'd be nice if he made the NCAA tournament just so people would stop saying he's never made the NCAA tournament. But, you know, if he doesn't make the NCAA tournament, is he going to be fired? No, not at all. You know, it's not in Memphis's best interest to do that for a variety of reasons.
Okay, real quick, give me the Peloton report. It was about a week ago that you started in earnest on the Peloton. Very quickly, how's it going?
It's going well. I'm a few days removed from being on it because I played golf both on Saturday and Sunday. I walked 18 holes on Saturday and Sunday. That's about 8 miles, 7 to 8 miles.
How many do you count your steps? What does it count to walk? How many steps do you get walking 18 holes?
Okay, let me see. I'll look it up right now.
I bet it's 18,000 steps. I bet it's 18,000 steps from walking. I bet you're into the 20,000 steps if you walk 18 holes.
On Saturday, I did 21,000 steps. And on Sunday, I did 22,000 steps. And so,
that counts.
I'm still hurt.
That counts. That absolutely counts. Of course. Yeah.
So I'm still hurting. Like, I couldn't move yesterday. Like, it's weird. Like, I can walk nonstop. I guess it's just part of getting old. Like, I walked, you know, it says 9.2 miles on Sunday. I walked. And by the way, pushing a golf cart, a push cart.
Yeah.
You know, I walked 9.2 miles on Sunday, and I could have walked another 5 miles probably. You know, as long as I keep moving. Then I get in my car and I drive home, and I'm still for like 30 minutes, and I'm not joking. I can barely get out of the car. I just lock up. And so then moving just becomes difficult. So yesterday was a recovery day, but I'm looking at the Peloton right now, and I promise you I'll be on it today and every day going forward this week, and then I'll get all my right. steps in on the weekend.
Thanks, GP. I'll talk to you at 5. Appreciate it.
Bye-bye.
Yeah, that's Gary Parrish from the Gary Parrish Show. You notice he's playing golf, and people are out playing golf. People are going to picnics. Not picnics. There's no picnics in the world. People don't picnic, do they, really? Who picnics?
Not really. I think
not
that's
really.
Just
they
a movie
barbecue.
Thing.
That's just a movie thing. Yeah, but you barbecue, right? You have backyard barbecues. Don't
Heck
you do
yeah.
that? You have cookouts. Is that what you call them? You call it a cookout?
Barbecues.
You have people over to your house. There's no question about that. You're going on vacations. You're doing all that stuff, and you probably haven't bought any new clothes in like forever because you've been basically wearing the same sweatpants for the last year and a half. Well, get yourself to Oak Hall and spruce yourself up. You walk in there right now, it is stunningly beautiful. Their collections, Peter Millar, Johnny O, which was the one you mentioned yesterday?
Faherty, obviously.
Faherty, obviously. They also, here's the other thing. They're so incredibly helpful. They will suggest things to me that I never would have thought of for myself. Like, for example, I bought a suit coat. I bought two suit coats there about a year ago, before the pandemic. So 2 years ago, year and a half ago. And one of them, I love this one, right? And then Paul said, try this one. And I'm like, that's not me.
Mm-hmm.
That's not me. It was just a little, he just nudged me as it's a little beyond me, right? And that one gets easily more compliments than any sport coat I've ever worn.